Like what you hear? Tell your friends. Ththanks for listening to HRNradio.com.
Hey there, and welcome back to the Dr. Teresa Nicasio Show. This is a place of inspiration, education, and hope for a kinder, healthier, and more sustainable world. On this program, we talk about the things that matter most to you, your loved ones, and our planet, including the hard-to-talk-about and controversial topics that really need to be brought to the light. I'd like to make a special shout-out for our wonderful show sponsor, New Roots Herbal, for making this show possible. As many of you know, New Roots Herbal are the Canadian makers of high-quality health products that we know we can trust. They are amazing. To learn more about this terrific company and their products and publications, visit their website at newrootsherbal.com. Also, if you'd like to be a sponsor for this show or have any questions about the program, contact me directly through my TeresaNicasio.com website. I love connecting with all of you and hearing, you know, how the program touches your life. And you know, it's Teresa with an H and Nicasio with an N like Nancy. So it's TheresaNicasio, two S's, S-S-I-O as an octopus, .com. Be sure to tune in next time when we'll be continuing with our Empowered Health series with the invisible gardener, Andy Lopez, who will be teaching us how to manage garden pests in a non-toxic, safe, and sustainable way. Andy is so fun. I was on his show, the Don't Panic, It's Organic show, a couple of months ago. he's really fun. I think you're going to enjoy that program and get a lot of really helpful information. He's been doing this for a long time. Then for the following two shows, so we're going to be doing something different. I've never done this before, but we're going to be having a two-part series, a two-part sustainable holiday series to cap off the year. I thought it was perfect with the holidays coming. You're in for a special treat with international renowned zero waste blogger and spokeswoman Catherine Kellogg, and she's going to teach us the joys and how-tos of zero waste living for the holidays of all times. Anyway, we're going to have a blast at that show. When I told my husband about Catherine, who, by the way, in at least in my mind and heart, she's a modern-day superhero. But anyway, I told him how she only produces one canning jar. We're not even talking a massive one, just a regular one canning jar of trash over an entire year. I mean, this is insane. It's fantastic. Anyway, he thought I was joking. He said it's impossible. But anyway, it's no joke, and it actually is possible. Catherine is super inspiring. You're going to love her. I just feel inspired beyond belief. Be sure to mark your calendar for these exciting shows. That's going to be for the November-December show. Anyway, as we continue, as we talk about today, so we're continuing with our Empowered Health series, and we're going to be hearing from a guest, a very special guest. I've been wanting to get on this show for literally almost 2 years. Since I started the show, I was like, I've got to get Nadine on. Anyway, a little bit about Nadine. So 14 years after beginning her nursing career in 1992 in emergency, trauma, and critical care at hospitals throughout Oregon, Nadine Grizgoyak almost died from multi-system organ failure. She's got an incredible story you're going to be hearing more about today. Anyway, you're going to want to buckle your seats for this show. I mean, this is big stuff. Having survived the unthinkable, Nadine is now one of the most respected and sought-after patient advocates, consultants, and spokeswomen about celiac disease and gluten in the world. In addition to her advocacy, her clinical work, and her podcast called Gluten Free RN, Nadine has given over 1,800 lectures internationally and recently released her first book called Donation. D-O-U-G-H, I love that title. Donation, a nurse's memoir of celiac disease from missed diagnosis to food and health activism. I love this woman as both a colleague and a friend, and I'm thrilled, so thrilled, that she's agreed to take time from her busy schedule to share with all of you information that's going to surprise and empower you. So I just want to forewarn you, we're going to go deep today, folks, and this material is probably going to surprise most, if not all of you. I want to forewarn you, though, that given our relationship with gluten in today's world, some of what Nadine's about to share with us today may not be what you'd like to hear, but you'll want to hear it, even if it's a little hard to hear. Hang in there, because what she's going to be sharing today is the real deal and may offer you and your loved ones answers to health challenges that have baffled even your doctor. Best of all, you know, we're talking about some pretty scientific, you know, medical stuff. Nadine is one of the most fun-loving and down-to-earth people I know. And I love that she has this terrific knack for translating complex information about your health into plain English. Yeah, she's real people. Love this. Anyway, it's really a great gift to have you here today, Nadine. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Teresa. I'm so excited to be here.
Oh, my God. Yeah, me too. And so many other people are. It's like across social media, everybody's chomping at the bit today. Well, why don't we just start, Nadine, with, if you would, just share. I know it's a whole story. It's obviously a whole book. But if you could share with our listeners today a little bit about your story, it's a snippet, and where your crazy passion for teaching others about gluten and celiac disease came from.
Oh, of course. Well, as a nurse, it was quite torturous to almost be dead, but not quite be dead yet, and trying to figure out if I was going to sign up for hospice. But I did get diagnosed with celiac disease by accident because I had the rash that goes along with it. Mm-hmm. But my testing, interestingly enough, came back negative. Now, there's a whole another issue with the testing called seronegativity, which shows up for some people. Currently, research is being done on that, so not everybody that has celiac disease will test positive for a number of reasons. But so my testing was negative, but I clearly got better on a gluten-free diet, and I'm 11 years later, obviously not dead. So my passion for it comes from the fact that as a nurse and as a mother and as a healthcare provider and an advocate for a number of people, I realized I had been duped, not just like from my education, but from the, you know, food manufacturers and even just history. So I really had to dig deep myself for research and re-educate myself as far as being a mother and a nurse and as a researcher, an artist and a scientist. So it all came into play, and I learned a lot over the last 11 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, so those of you who are listening, you know, some of you have celiac disease or have been diagnosed, whether clinically diagnosed or with blood tests or whatever, and some of you, probably the majority of you out there, don't have it, or at least don't think you have it. Whether you do or not is really irrelevant. I'd like to, at this moment, it actually is relevant, but I'd like to address that issue, Nadine. So since most of our listeners probably don't have celiac disease, why should they care about gluten?
Well, interestingly enough, the genes are extremely common. So celiac disease is a genetic disorder currently at this point is what it's considered. And roughly 30 to 50% of the population carry those genes. So the
30 to 50%.
Yes.
That's a very different number than we hear about. We usually hear 1%, don't we?
Oh, those are the people that supposedly have celiac disease at this point that are not even found, because it's estimated that 97% of the people that have celiac disease haven't been discovered yet.
Mm-hmm.
So those numbers are really interesting, and I know that they're going to change shortly, hopefully, and I really hope it won't take 20, 25 years for the correct information to get out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So just in general, you know, in a way, kind of, sort of, setting celiac disease aside, can you talk a little bit about gluten? And I was just in France, so I,
oh, sure. Oh, yeah.
Gluten everywhere, as well. What's here, too. But what's the deal with gluten? I mean, so many people talk about, God, when I went to Europe, I can eat the you know, the grains there, for even people who think that they're sensitive. But other people say there's no problem with gluten. It's just a bunch of hogwash. It's it's all just a fad. Can you talk more about the science now? You know, what do we know about that protein gluten? How does our body, if we have no celiac disease, and maybe if we don't even have those the genetic markers, how does the human body respond to gluten, and why is it something that probably it would be wise for all of us to have it on our radar and really rethink it?
Sure. There's a couple proteins specifically, the gliadin and the glutenin, which are the two proteins that equal gluten. They're long elastic chains of amino acids, which our bodies as human beings do not have any enzymes to break down. So even without celiac disease, those two proteins will cause inflammation in just about every human being that eats them. Mm-hmm. And once you have that inflammation, it can trigger any number of other associated diseases.
Yeah.
And certainly we know that, you know, inflammation is the basis for strokes, cardiac issues, which, you know, heart attacks, strokes, any type of chronic illness. And really what the goal is to get rid of the inflammation entirely in our intestines. And the only way to do that, and that's for everybody, is to get rid of the number one proteins that are causing that. And that would be number one. And number two, dairy, because they're molecularly very similar, and our bodies read them the same.
Right, right. So that whole idea with inflammation, Jean Wallace, I saw her speak years ago, and she says amazing things. It was at a cancer conference I was at, and she was talking about how inflammation is also, many of the people, is actually the mother wart of many cancers as well.
Sure.
Right.
And
so,
So even let's just say people don't have celiac disease, or they do, if you have inflammation, you have an autoimmune issue, you have deficiencies of very important amino acids and very important minerals and vitamins, so you're malnourished, that is a recipe for malignancies and cancer. So it's extremely important for people to be aware of the fact that it's not just people with celiac disease. It is preventive to go on some form of a gluten-free or paleo-type diet where your body is allowed to get rid of all of that inflammation. And you're avoiding all of those proteins that can cause inflammation. And just to speak to your question, Europe and the wheat being different there, people feel that they can eat the wheat there. The wheat is somewhat different in Europe, and there are a few reasons for that. But I always remind people that people in Europe with celiac disease or non-celiac gluten sensitivity can't eat their wheat either. So whether you have symptoms or not, that damage is still occurring.
Right, right. Yeah, I think it's an important message. Now, let's get back to this whole enzyme question, because enzymes are becoming like one of the, it's like the new probiotic of, it's a new thing. And everybody's trying to find, well, gosh, if we're lacking the enzyme, it's like basically what you're saying, and what my understanding is that the human body, the pancreas, the liver, is unable to produce enzymes that can break down the gluten molecules. So some people might say, well, gosh, I'll just take digestive enzymes. How do you respond to that?
Well, the interesting thing about the gluten is that it does start to cause damage in the mouth. It's not just in the duodenum, which is where typically doctors will look for the damage with an endoscopy. But the damage occurs in the entire length of the GI tract. So from the mouth to your rectum, there's a potential for damage from the gluten. So those enzymes, and I like to refer to them as snake oil, when would you take them? Would you take them before a meal or during a meal or after? Because really, there's no way those enzymes will break down those proteins. And even if they do, even if they're completely capable of breaking down those proteins, they are only fractionating those proteins, making them still a long-chain amino acid, which are not, they're not available to us as nutrition. So the fact that, you know, people say, well, wheat is very high in protein, those proteins are not available to our bodies to use for nutrition.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's one of the arguments why gluten or why like wheat has produced so much and produced and given around the world for to help with world hunger. It's they say, well, it's a really high protein food, but what you're saying is that they're it's proteins, but they're not they're A, not accessible to actually use, and B, they cause harm when they are in the system.
Correct. So they are they're empty calories, but they are calories. So sometimes that can sustain people, but not for very long. And the, you know, interestingly enough, these proteins also provide what's called gluten exorphins, or they have a gluten, they have like an opioid-like effect on the brain. And that's even with, you know, celiac disease, non-celiac gluten sensitivity, so it causes people to be addicted to their food. And some people think, you know, like marijuana is a gateway drug. I really believe that food is a gateway drug, especially for things like opioid addiction. So if we're going to look at prevention of opioid overdoses and things like that, we really do need to look at people's food first.
Well, that's interesting. I've never heard that. I've never heard that perspective. That's very intriguing. Yeah, so there's a whole thing. We had Cindy O'Meara on. She's a producer of What's With Wheat, and she's a nutritionist. We had her on a while back. We've had Jill Carnahan come on. She's talked a fair bit about things in, like, leaky gut. And we've had Jules Shepherd on. We've had Dr. Alicia Fasano on. Pardon?
I love Jules. She's great.
Yeah, I love Jules. She's so wonderful. So we've heard a bit about leaky gut. Can you speak just a little bit about, and you've alluded to, I think, with the inflammation, but a little bit about those prolamines, aminos that are causing the, why are they a problem?
Okay, that's a good question also. So once people have a leaky gut or increased permeability of their intestinal wall, many things are capable of getting into your bloodstream. So think normally if people have a healthy intestine, then it's like a brick wall. It's your immune system. It's a large part of your immune system, your intestinal tract. If you have damage from eating gluten or other things sometimes, or medications even, then you have what's called a leaky gut. And that then becomes like a sponge. So things that should stay in your GI tract are allowed to get into your bloodstream. And at that point, they will wreak havoc on every organ in your body, including your brain, because you don't just have a leaky gut. You have a leaky blood-brain barrier. You have leaky lungs, which are another part of your immune system, and a leaky skin. So it's all epithelial tissue. And once those proteins are in your bloodstream, long-chain amino acids, and again, we don't have any enzymes to break them down, they will cross the blood-brain barrier, causing, at the very low end, things like brain fog, which people find very annoying, and every conceivable mental health disorder, including depression, anxiety, and schizophrenia. And they knew that back in the 60s. That's not new news. And, you know, respiratory difficulties such as asthma, skin rashes, and quite frankly, your skin is an external expression of whatever's going on internally. Again, all epithelial tissue. So if people have rashes that don't go away, or they have to take steroid creams, or they have eczema, and their skin is cracked, and it itches, and it hurts, guess what? Their intestines the same way, which is not a good idea.
Yeah. Well, you know, a long time ago in some of my studies around the visceral and that, I remember learning about how the gut, the body's like a big donut, And so we have those epithelial cells in our gut. But we are a big donor, and so then it wraps around to the outside. So if we have things like you're talking about, like the dermatitis, the eczema, the psoriasis, the acne, any kind of issues on the skin, rosacea, whatever, that like you're saying, it's like a mirror of what's happening in the gut. So it's you don't have to look that far to see that there's something going on with your gut.
Correct.
If there's anything going on your skin.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and then the other thing is it's some of the same cells, isn't it, that wraps around the brain as well?
Exactly. That's true.
Yeah, so it's like if we're having problems with thinking, and we're going to get into some of these other things later in the show, but it's like, okay, so we're a donut, it's wrapped around, and then it also wraps up and around our brain. So we're looking even potentially at learning disabilities or other cognitive challenges and that. So real quick, though, because we don't have a long time before break.
Sure.
Real quick, can you just speak about the celiac disease screening, because that just blew me away about how much is not being screened.
Correct. So I think what I'm going to talk about here is the fact that in 2004, the NIH, or the National Institute of Health in the United States, talked about doing a mass screening, which they opted not to do. So they were going to do a mass screening and a healthcare education program, but none of that happened. So a lot of what has been happening is those entities have been looking for a pill or a non-dietary treatment plan for celiac disease. And the testing, I really wish they would have spent a lot more time and money actually looking for because the testing at this point, we know the common celiac panel is 70% false negative nationwide. So a lot of people are getting missed from that aspect. A lot of people are getting missed because doctors actually don't know how to interpret the results, which is a little concerning. And because of that, a lot of them feel uncomfortable ordering the blood test to begin with. So there's lots of barriers for people actually getting tested. And the vast majority of people don't know what their HLA, DQ2, DQ8 status is, the genes that go along with celiac disease.
Okay, well, I'm going to pause you, Nadine.
Sure.
Because there's going to be more to talk about, guys, around the screening. We're going to be talking about gluten in the brain, gluten in the skin, autoimmune stuff, gluten in kids. But we need to take a brief break. Don't go right away, folks. We have so much to cover. So stick around. We'll be right back.
You're listening to HealthyLife.net, the radio network that brings positive talk with positive change to make your world a little better.
Welcome back to the Dr. Teresa Nicasio Show. We're here today with a gluten-free RN, Nadine Grzegorczak. I always have a hard time with your name, Nadine. Grzegorczak. And she is amazing, full of tons of information. Before the break, Nadine started talking a little bit about celiac testing, and it's riddled with issues, both logistically, probably money-wise, but also, there's some things that I learned from Nadine speaking with her recently that I never knew about, that there's actually certain genes that aren't even that they know are actually associated with celiac disease that aren't even being tested. So people are thinking that they don't have celiac disease, even according to tests, and they actually do. And there's many, many, many false negatives, like 7% of those who are tested with one of the tests are actually false negative. So can we start from there, Nadine? And I'm just going to, set you off because you know so much. I'm just going to let you talk about this.
Sure. So the testing is really not all of that accurate because we're only testing for a couple antibodies anyway. I like currently, and this always changes depending on how, new products or new testing that comes out. But Cyrex Labs really does a great job of testing like 26 of the different antibodies, where the standard antibody test only tests for maybe 6. And
who tests for 27?
Cyrex Labs, C-Y-R-E-X. And then for kids, I really like the Entero Lab, which does a stool analysis, and they will also do a fecal fat score. And that's how they used to diagnose children with celiac disease in the 1920s, 30s, 40s, and 50s. when, you know, they thought it was primarily a childhood disease, and they really didn't know that it was gluten that was causing it, but these kids weren't absorbing fat. Well, that's really important information for most people to know with celiac disease, because if they're not absorbing fat, they don't have any hope of absorbing fat-soluble vitamins such as A, B, E, or K. And then, you know, of course, that leads to malnutrition. So the fat-soluble vitamin test can be, fecal fat score can be very useful, especially for children, because it's easy and it's not a blood stick. There's lots to talk about for the testing, but one of the reasons that a lot of people are told they don't have celiac disease, but in fact they do or they might, is because they're IgA deficient. And IgA deficiency actually is caused by organ damage, typically intestinal damage, which would be a good indicator that somebody should be further tested for celiac disease, either with an endoscopy or some other testing. So, you know, I just met with a family yesterday, and the mom had been diagnosed with celiac disease 3 years ago, and none of the other family members had been tested. This is the first time they'd really heard that they should be tested, and they had to ask their doctors, and many of their doctors told them they wouldn't test them for celiac disease, which I consider that to be somewhat negligent, because you have a first-degree relative diagnosed with celiac disease. She's not the only one. Mm-hmm. So it's very important that people understand that, you know, there's rarely, if ever, just one celiac person in a family, because it is genetic.
Right.
So that's why we recommend that everybody get tested, and
right,
not just once. One test will never rule you out, and it's very important for people to understand that also. And plus, we're testing for DQ2 or DQ8, but for a long time, doctors were discounting the fact that DQ2.5 was the main DQ2 gene, and they were discounting the DQ2.2 gene. But that's not true. If you're a DQ2 gene carrier, you're susceptible to developing celiac disease.
Mm-hmm. And I'm going to come back to these DQs, and this is not Dairy Queen DQ. Right, this is a different kind of DQ, but because I know there's other implications with that. But I just lost my thought. There was something you were saying about the endoscopy. So something that Jules talked about when she was on the show was how often. Basically, it's a bit of a Russian roulette, whether even if you have an endoscopy, you can get a lot of false negatives from that, and they say
exactly.
You should have a minimum of at least like three biopsy spots. But even that, there's no guarantee. You want to talk a little bit about that?
That's correct, because the damage can actually be patchy. So the endoscopies are typically, the pulse for celiac disease are typically taken from the first 2 to 3 inches in the duodenum, but the GI tract is about 30 feet long. So if you take any tube, your garden hose, and you only take samples of it from the first 2 inches, you can imagine that the rest of the tube might be affected much more than those 2 inches that you're actually testing.
Yeah, so it's like going fishing and not knowing where you're fishing.
Exactly.
So real quick, when you were talking about some of these DQ7, DQ8, DQ, that there's actually other autoimmune problems and other health issues that people don't even realize are related. So
that's correct. And again, a lot of these studies were done in, you know, like the 60s, 70s, and 80s. So a lot of this isn't new information, but it's new information for people that haven't heard it. And that is that virtually every type 1 diabetic is a gene carrier for DQ2 or DQ8, 100%. So it's the same for MS. So the more we study autoimmune issues related to celiac disease, and we already know that once you have one autoimmune disease, you're 30 to 50% more likely to develop other ones. That's why people have lupus and Sjogren's and autoimmune thyroiditis and celiac disease and, you know, MS. Those are all autoimmune diseases, which means your body is attacking itself. And if it all comes back to the fact that for some people that they're eating gluten, it would be enormously helpful for people to know that it is potentially preventative for so many other autoimmune issues, including type 1 diabetes.
Yeah, so when you say it's preventative, you mean that someone could prevent their the triggering or the having flared or even any expression of mm-hmm. Of autoimmune problems, whatever they are, not just celiac disease.
Correct.
Yes, so this is huge, you guys. You're going to want to listen to this recording more than once. Once it's out, it's this is really, really important stuff. We're gonna have to take a break, but when we come back, can you talk a little bit about things like fatty liver, NASH, the thyroid, and then get into also the brain and skin when we return?
Sure.
Would that be okay? Okay, we've got
of course.
And lots to cover. All right, guys, stick around. We have got a lot more with this awesome gluten-free RN when we come back.
HealthyLife.net, the positive radio network.
All right, folks, welcome back. You're listening to the Dr. Teresa Nicasio Show. If you're just tuning in, we have with us today the author of Dough Nation, the gluten-free RN, Nadine Grzegorzak, who is sharing the most cutting-edge information about gluten. And some of it's not even that cutting-edge, some we've known for a while, but we just haven't known about gluten that most people, including myself, some of this material don't even know about. So most of you listening probably think that gluten and even celiac disease, all of this, it just affects the gut, because we've been talking a lot about the gut. But Nadine, can you talk a little bit more about how it affects other parts of the body and other health conditions that people may not realize is may either be caused by or at least a contributor may be gluten?
So from day one, I realized that the thyroid, for some reason, has a bullseye on it for these gluten proteins, and the gluten proteins will affect the thyroid in not a good way. So really, I don't care if it's Graves' disease or hypothyroidism or Hashimoto's, whatever it is, especially if it's an autoimmune thyroiditis, it typically can be traced back to gluten. And once people go on a gluten-free diet, provided they haven't had their thyroid taken out or ablated, then their thyroid will recover. And that's the beauty of this, is that many diseases or many issues with our bodies will heal once we remove the gluten and the protein. So interestingly enough, because we have an entire enteric nervous system in our intestines, celiac disease is also primarily neurologic. And I've said this before, is that people don't understand that constipation for the vast majority of people is actually a neurologic disorder. It's paralysis of the intestines. Hmm. So if you think about it that way, drinking more water or eating more fiber is not going to cure the issue.
Right.
It's not going to help. And the other issue is that all of our neurotransmitters, or the vast majority of them, come from our intestines, and they are... they're sent to our brain, those neurotransmitters, via the vagus nerve. And if those neurotransmitters aren't there or they're impaired, then they affect our brain. So it's a huge chemical pathway up to our brain, but our brain doesn't send chemical pathways very frequently back down to our body. There'll be messages, there'll be information pathways, but it's not the same. The neural pathways up to the brain are, it's like a super highway of information, and it's all based on the information that from what we consume,
mm-hmm.
whether it's food or alcohol or drugs. So people have to take that in.
Yeah, so how often, to think about, you know, as a psychologist myself, and how often I have clients who go to the doctor and they are depressed, and so they're mm-hmm. given their Wellbutrin or their Prozac or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, whatever they're given, and the doctor doesn't even ask them about their gluten consumption as well as, you know, gluten, dairy, and sugar, which cannot be related. So it's like you're just trying to, okay, we'll give you those neurotransmitters. Your body's not producing them or producing enough, so we're going to, well, actually not give them to you. Well, I'm going to give you things to try to keep them in the segments, but a lot of times people take them and they have no impact. But if you don't have the neurotransmitters
exactly.
in the first place, then what's the point of preventing them from being reuptaked, right? The serotonin reuptake.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. if there's no serotonin to reuptake, then it, you know, people are told all the time they failed that medication. Well, really, it's not an appropriate medication because they don't have any serotonin.
Exactly. So anxiety, we're seeing such a huge rise in anxiety in everybody, including kids, depression. No one's like having that be a first line, such a benign approach would be, well, let's look at diet. Let's see if we can take out gluten and see what happens.
Of course. Yeah. It just makes sense.
Yeah, and epilepsy. He talked about epilepsy and some of the other, you know, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, you know, what some of the research is saying about those things.
Sure. We know, and anybody that has friends or family members knows that more and more people are getting diagnoses of Alzheimer's and Parkinson's and MS and any degenerative neurological disorder. There's a couple reasons that I can pull out from research. One is that people have been told to be on a low-fat diet or a poor-fat diet. And really, our brain and our nervous system is made up of fat. Our brain is fat. The myelin that covers every nerve cell in our body is made of fat. It's an insulation. So if we're eating poor fats, or we're not eating enough fats, or we're not able to absorb fats because we have damage to our intestine, then our neurological system will be impaired. And that's not just for celiac disease. That is for non-celiac gluten sensitivity also. Mm-hmm. And any work by Dr. Hajivasiliou from the UK will very clearly point that out. Mm-hmm. And that's anybody with, you know, ALS, MS, potentially misdiagnosed. And some people are told that they have a psychosomatic disorder, which means they're causing their symptoms or they're making them up.
Yeah.
Which is very concerning to me.
I've seen so much of that, oh my God, in my practice. People are so relieved when I work with them and they're like, oh my God. Some good things happen. Speaking of fat, can you talk about fatty liver and hepatitis?
Oh, yeah. So NASH is another one of those things that is coming up per the CDC as an epidemic. And people don't know they have it. It actually leads to cirrhosis of the liver. And this is in people that don't drink. So even children are developing NASH or fatty liver. It doesn't show up on lab tests. It's hard to find on ultrasound. And I believe it still doesn't show up on ultrasound. And so they don't find out they have fatty liver disease until they have end-stage liver failure or on autopsy. So it's extremely important for people to understand that the NASH is actually caused by environmental factors or what we eat, so carbohydrates. So a high-carbohydrate diet is going to cause your liver not to work very well and to accumulate fat, which is a very bad thing because it leads to cirrhosis or liver failure. And the CDC is actually estimating that this is going to be the number one transplant, but they're also concerned because there's potentially not enough healthy livers to transplant, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's we've got a kind of bite in our own tail here.
Yeah. So there's a lot of things.
Yeah. Now,
and
just
also,
real quick, I know.
Go ahead.
We were talking about the brain. I just really quickly, because I know the epilepsy, this is huge. And can you just speak briefly about that? Because a lot of folks out there with some seizure disorder don't realize the connection. I've talked with several people that the doctor didn't even mention or ask about gluten. So can you just touch upon that quickly?
Sure. Any seizure disorder, really, especially the idiopathic seizure disorders, anything idiopathic should be looked at as celiac disease first. But what happens is because those proteins will cross the blood-brain barrier, those long-chain amino acid proteins, the gluten protein, they get into the brain. And, of course, I hope people understand that that is not a good thing. Number one, it causes inflammation in the brain. And number two, because of that inflammation, it causes hypoxia, which is decreased oxygen flow. So those proteins can be very damaging to the brain. They're obviously not going to be helpful. So we see people that have previously seizure disorders, they clear up, they don't have seizures anymore, or they're much less frequent on a gluten-free diet.
Mm-hmm.
There's a great, little video, and if you want a link to that, I can send it. It's a child that actually
presented. I'll add it to your page.
Mm-hmm.
I'll add it to your page. Send me the link.
Okay, perfect. it's a really great little video that shows how the neurological of can be, it really is, celiac disease really is primarily a neurologic disorder, and gluten really is primarily causing neurologic damage to people.
Right.
Perhaps not today, but down the road.
Right. So any other goodies like that, I will be adding to her page on the TeresaNicasio.com page, folks, so you can get that in any articles that Nadine wants to share with us. We need to go to a break. We have one more awesome packed segment. We're going to touch upon what saved Nadine's life was the connection of the dermatitis, the skin disorder, and the celiac, which literally saved her life. And we're also going to mention, talk a little bit about gluten in kids. Some information is going to really surprise you. So don't go away. We'll be right back.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to the Dr. Teresa Nicasio Show. For those of you who are just joining us today, we're here with the gluten-free RN, Nadine Grzegowiak, who is opening our eyes about gluten, and she's the author of a great book called Donation, and some other good stuff. But there's some more material we got to hit before we end today. Let's talk a little bit about gluten in the skin, Nadine. You were literally like heading to hospice. Palliative care, and then someone discovered your skin, your dermatitis. A lot of you, we all like to have beautiful skin, and we have skin issues, and it's not just from the outside, it's the inside too.
Right. Well, I always had eczema as a kid, even, you know, those tiny blisters, and my fingers would crack, it was on my hands. But then as an adult, so right after I got pneumonia, and my immune system started to fail, it disappeared in my hands and showed up in funky patches on my body. Very itchy, very painful. Nothing I did would make it go away. And so I went to see the dermatologist, and she's the one that actually diagnosed me with celiac disease and dermatitis herpetiformis. Two things I previously had never heard of as a nurse. And, you know, she tested me, but, you know, we did the blood test, which showed, you know, did not have celiac disease. And they did a biopsy of my skin, which also showed I didn't have dermatitis herpetiformis. But there's ways, that's not a very accurate test either. And a lot of practitioners don't know how to do it correctly. And it's difficult. And basically what they're looking for is IgA deposits underneath the skin. You have this deep tissue damage from these IgA deposits, and they will come up out of your skin, much like a nettle or something very painful. It's another way your body is trying to get rid of the gluten protein, but it's very painful, I can tell you that. And so anybody that has eczema or contact dermatitis or any reaction to metals or anything, I highly recommend that you get tested for celiac disease or just remove gluten from your diet once you have a baseline test done and see if those rashes resolve, because many times they will. And I really see celiac disease on people's skin all of the time, including with acne. And unfortunately, currently in this country, and I'm sure in Canada too, these kids are being treated with antibiotics. Mm-hmm. Well, long-term antibiotics too, let me remind you. Mm-hmm. And I shudder to think what that does to their microbiome.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And their immune system in the future.
Right. And yet, you know, gluten is, you know, kids with acne, it's quite normative. It's like accepted. And you know, you talked about pizza face. I'd never heard that term before, pizza face.
Takes
you're saying there's
meaning.
A reason for that, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
There is a reason for it. It is the gluten. And interestingly enough, dermatitis herpetiformis is influenced by antibiotics, and it's influenced by hormones. So when women actually have their cycle and they break out, that could potentially be a good sign that they have celiac disease, and that is dermatitis herpetiformis.
Right. And none of us were told that growing up, right? It's all new.
Right, not at all.
Right.
Just don't
sugar
and wash your face.
Yeah, totally. So real quick, gluten in kids.
Yes.
There's all these indicators that I never knew of when we were talking. I was like, what? Can you share with our listeners a bit about that?
So I see a lot of children, and I also see a lot of children that are not tested appropriately for celiac disease. or, you know, too late. So failure to thrive, stunted growth, these kids that are falling off the growth chart and, you know, the parents are told they're picky eaters or, you know, that they're just, they'll catch up. That's all incorrect information. These children truly do need to be tested for celiac disease. Some of them are nonverbal. They have delayed growth and development. They have difficulty focusing. And even the bedwetting, that can be an inflammation of the bladder lining, which is called interstitial cystitis. And you can do all the behavior modification you want, but if you have an inflamed bladder wall lining, then you're not going to cure or fix bedwetting until you remove the gluten and the things that are causing that lining of the bladder to be inflamed. And that's for adults, too.
And you're saying focus. So, you know, we've got this ADHD, you know, explosion ADD in our culture, just kind of like with the serotonin reuptake inhibitors for depression, anxiety. You know, all of the Ritalin or Adderall in the world is not necessarily going to fix this.
Right, exactly.
Those are huge. And you mentioned about constipation. Go ahead.
No, constipation and diarrhea. One girl came in, and she was 16 years old, and she thought everybody had diarrhea every day. That was normal for her. So, you know, it's re-examining or having someone really look at what people are, you know, suffering with for years as opposed to them having to assume it's normal or they're making things up. And these kids really do need to be supported in being on a gluten-free diet by both parents and the entire family, because a lot of people will unfortunately try to sabotage or love the kids with gluten, you know, more than their parents do or something. I don't know what that whole thing is because these kids need to be 100%, because even a breadcrumb will cause the same autoimmune response. These kids need to be on a 100% gluten-free diet.
Right, cutting down doesn't do it.
100% of the time.
Hmm? Yeah, just cutting down doesn't do it. A lot of people think, oh, it doesn't eat very much, and you know, it's just not getting it. That it's literally got to be 100%. Yeah, and the whole thing, picky eaters you mentioned, and even disordered eating disorders, and other kind of self-medicating with food, because those are huge. But Nadine, we are getting short of time, and I want to be sure to mention again about your book, donation. How can people get the book? I mean, you can obviously, there's a link on my page for it, but is it on Amazon, and it's in, you know, pretty accessible?
Yeah, it's on Amazon. It should be in libraries. You can always ask your library to order it.
You just had a cruise, and you're going to be having another cruise on the Rhine. Can you share with our listeners a little bit about that?
Sure. The cruise we did on the Danube was fabulous. For most people that went, for everyone that went with us, they said it was the first time they traveled and they didn't get sick, which is always a good vote of confidence. And so we're planning to do the Rhine trip in August 22nd of next year from Basel to Amsterdam. And it's with the International Celiac Disease Symposium in Paris, which is being held from September 4th through 7th. So some of us will be actually flying or taking the train back down to Paris for the cruise.
Nice. That's great. So folks, have that on your radar. We'll put that on the page as well. Thank you so much for joining us today, Nadine. And gosh, thank all of you for listening and tuning in today. I hope you've enjoyed the program. I want to again thank our wonderful sponsor, New Roots Herbal, for making this show possible. And be sure to join us in our next shows that are going to be awesome. I'm Teresa, and this has been the Dr. Teresa Nicasio Show. Until next time, have a great week.